good morning and welcome to Thursday morning. Evan Bray, great to have you here on a pretty nice day. Sunny, actually, today for most of the province. Maybe a sprinkle of rain in a couple of isolated spots, but definitely a different story than what we saw yesterday. And this is actually paving the way to a fairly nice weekend and actually hot weather, which is on the way next week. Well, we got a full Thursday morning for you. Lots of different things we're exploring. The topic of Western separation continues to bubble into coffee shop discussions, supper table conversations. Some will have you believe there's absolutely no support for it. Others will tell you this is going to be a for sure thing. I've got a couple of guests coming up after 10 that I would suggest are on polar opposite sides of this issue. One, a former NHL player, and the other, a former RCMP member, both joining the show to discuss what their version of Saskatchewan and Canada looks like going forward. We'll open up the phone lines for you to join in on that as well. We've talked about this a few times. May is Mental Health Month. We've had a number of guests on throughout the month. My guest today is a great leader who's had his own experiences. He uses them to help others in Saskatchewan and across Canada. Alan Kaler is joining me for a chat. Actually, Alan was on with John Gormley a couple of years ago talking about his journey and some of the talks that he does. Well, now he's written a book, Transforming Pain into Purpose. Great book. It's absolutely going to help people with their own difficult mental health journey, and we'll chat with him. Also, on a lighter note, yesterday when we talked about, well, we were talking about Cheers because, of course, we lost the great Norm Peterson. George Wendt passed away. And as we talked about that, and I played the theme song to Cheers, we were talking about it, people were saying, oh my gosh, this transports me back. And then we got into this conversation about how TV show themes, the second you hear them, you picture a time in your life when maybe it was coming home after school and watching TV. Maybe it was that favorite show you tuned in for, must watch every Tuesday night, for example. We'll talk about your memories that are associated with your favorite TV shows and their theme songs coming up after 11:30 this morning. All right, let's get going. Here is today's Big Talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome. Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show, The Big Talker.
Well, following the federal election, there's been chatter in various different forms about this notion of electoral reform. Well, what exactly is that? I've read tons of articles on this, watched a number of interviews. Electoral reform could mean a fairly significant change to outcomes of elections, depending on what you choose. So Canada's voting system, called First Past the Post, is basically where the candidate with the most votes wins a riding. Even if more people voted for other candidates combined, it's the candidate with the most votes that wins. Some critics say it creates unfair results, regional division, and fuels political disappointment. Is this part of reform? Is this where we should go? What are the options? I'm happy to welcome to the show this morning political science professor Laura Stevenson from Western University. She specializes in political behaviors, electoral preferences, engagement with politics. She's here to talk a little bit about Canada's voting system and what maybe electoral reform could look like and consequences from that. Laura Stevenson joining us by phone. Laura, thanks so much for taking the call.
Happy to be here.
So I know in 2015, former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau campaigned on the promise of electoral reform, but that never came to fruition. What were the roadblocks or the barriers that he faced, or was it a concerted effort even to step into that?
I mean, he started the process, right? And there was a lot of kind of discussion, and there was a big committee that was struck, and they were taking statements from all sorts of people across the country, as well as experts. And I think what ended up happening is that the type of information that was being heard was kind of not leading to an obvious outcome. And that's because there are so many different electoral systems that can be chosen, and each one has little tweaks to it that can actually mean big benefits for specific types of parties. And in this case, you know, I think what was most telling is that at the end of that process, you know, the parties couldn't really agree on what should be the next kind of system. And so we had a lot of kind of disagreement about what would be best for Canada because there is no obvious outcome. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that kind of the biggest sticking points come from a couple of things. The first is that we here in Canada are very accustomed to having local representation, which means, you know, we have MPs and they are in our riding and we know who to call, right? When we're having trouble getting a passport or something like that. And in a lot of electoral systems, that kind of, you know, location-based link, it can be broken, either because the areas become a lot larger or because there aren't considered at all. Mm-hmm. So depending on the system you choose, that can be broken. And I think that is something that makes it really challenging to figure out the best system. But then there's also the advantages that different parties would get, right? So, I mean, there's always a lot of talk about straight proportional representation. And wouldn't that be great? The percentage of votes that each party gets is the same as the percentage of seats each party gets. But in reality, that's like hardly ever that simple. So there's typically things like thresholds, like parties have to get X percentage of support, or there's mixed member systems, and so they'll have some people that are assigned to constituencies and some that are kind of countrywide. And then you have to figure out the rules to say, you know, in which cases does somebody have enough support to sit in parliament. These all have issues for different parties, right? Mm-hmm. Especially smaller parties. But it's the key is to try to figure out, well, which system would actually be something that all Canadians would want? And I think this often comes down to thinking about, well, which party is going to get a benefit, right?
Right. And
that's dividing people.
Right. I was going to say, is there, so let's look at the first past the post electoral system versus a ranked ballot system. Can you give us just a brief explanation of the difference between the two? And then is there one that it is felt benefits one political lean or the other?
Sure. So the first past the post system, obviously that's what we have. We do know that it creates disproportionate outcomes. And what it tends to do is benefit the bigger parties, disadvantage smaller parties, unless they are geographically concentrated. Right. So if you have a small party, but it has a ton of support in one area,
like
then it's likely to win those rights. Right. Exactly. So that's what we can see with the first past the post. Ranked balloting can be very similar in the sense that we still have constituencies. But what happens is that you'll rank all the candidates down on a list or a certain number of them. And what this system tends to do is privilege the more moderate parties. So the parties that are going to be the second choice of the most people. Now, what that's going to end up meaning is typically something like a centrist party, which is where the Liberals have traditionally been, would end up being a beneficiary.
Mm-hmm. So,
is it possible?
Can I just jump in? So, you know, when we look at Saskatchewan as an example, in this last election, we have 14 ridings in the province. One, our northernmost riding, went Liberal, the other 13 Conservative. Is it possible that a change in how we vote from the first past the post to a ranked ballot system might actually change the outcome of what those votes look like?
Well, it could, right? Because when you look at the vote percentages in Saskatchewan, it's more like 65% were in favor of the Conservatives and about 27% were in favor of the Liberals, right? Which is very different than what the seat outcome ended up being. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is in those ridings where one party is like going ahead, I mean, sometimes we talk about things like wasted votes, right? So if you vote for a party that doesn't have a chance of winning or is lower down on the ballot, then it's like, oh, well, you know, your vote isn't really counted because it doesn't go to decide between the top two. But in a ranked system, what would end up happening is that those votes would actually be redistributed to their second preferences.
Right.
So it ends up being that whoever is the winner is like a majoritarian winner so that they have the support, whether first, second, third, whatever, of more people overall, like the majority of that population, than on other systems.
Mm-hmm. Laura Stevenson is my guest, professor and department chair for the Department of Political Science at Western University. So if I just kind of pull this all back, Laura, and premise this on the fact that there is this feeling of frustration, and I'm going to say Western Canada generally, that on election night, the outcome of the election was declared before some of the votes in the West were even counted. Is there any kind of election reform that rectifies that?
That one becomes a bit tricky.
I noticed by your long pause, Laura, that one might be a little bit tricky, but yes.
Well, I mean, and the reason is because, like, the way that happens has to do with how the seats are distributed across the country. How the seats are distributed across the country isn't because it's trying to favor one province or the other, but it's based on population.
Right.
So that one's a little harder to fix because there are more Canadians living in certain areas than in others. And when we think that every riding should have approximately the same number of people in them, that's where you get the distribution we do. So between that distribution and our time zones, that's when you end up with the situation we have.
Right? And I know we've had polls close at different times to try and mitigate a little bit of that time zone difference. Does proportional representation, which I know has multiple facets, you could have mixed member, single transferable, rural, urban, I've seen a number of different proportional representation models. Does it lean into that at all?
I mean, it would definitely change the idea that an outcome could be decided from the beginning, just because, you know, in any kind of system, there would be the idea that we need to know the overall vote shares before we can figure out the seat totals, right? Even if you had a mixed member system, which would have some people chosen in ridings like what we have now, and then it would have some version of a second tier of MPs, and those would either be chosen on a nationwide vote, or sometimes they're done in a top-up kind of way to kind of correct discrepancies or disproportionalities that come out of the individual riding level seats. You know, even in those cases, right, the overall outcome wouldn't be known until we knew how the entire country had voted.
Mm-hmm. Laura Stevenson is my guest, Western University. Before I let you go, it seems to me, and I'm looking for you to tell me, is this just my perception, or are we having a lot more recounts and ballot revisitations this year? It seems like it's in the news a lot more after that federal election.
I agree. It seems like it's in the news a lot more. I think there's any time an election is close in more ridings, that's what you'll see, right? Mm. Because some of these are just being triggered automatically, and some are being asked for. I think the fact is that this election in a lot of areas was really hard fought. And so because of that, that's why we're seeing these kinds of recounts. Of course, Canada still has paper ballots, which means, you know, errors occur, but they can be recounted. And that's kind of one of those nice aspects that, you know, you can literally have the papers in front of you. And then, I mean, sometimes it's a matter of, you know, arguing over which ballots should be rejected for various reasons too, right? So when any time it's super close, that's when you're going to see recounts. So I think it's in the news more, A, because we had a very unique election, I think, and B, because there's simply just more ridings in which the margins were smaller.
Laura, we've only got about a minute left, so a big question with little time, but what do you see this next few years looking like, given where we came from before the election? Very adversarial relationship in the House, certainly between the Conservatives and the Liberals. A fairly monumental election in terms of topics and polarization of votes. And where we've ended up now, do you expect to see much change over the next couple of years in the House?
You know, I am like on the edge of my seat waiting to see how it gets run, right? Because we have had our Prime Minister say he's not seeking an arrangement with the NDP, which would be the kind of easiest way for him to govern and get a lot of his policies passed. And so it's going to be really, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, to me, that signals that he's going to try and create more consensus with the other parties kind of on a individual basis based upon what he is putting forward in terms of the policy. So I'm hoping that it will mean less polarization, because we will have more bipartisan or multipartisan support for the policies coming forward.
Laura, this has been a great chat. I appreciate you giving us some time this morning.
You're welcome.
Laura Stevenson, Professor, Department Chair for the Department of Political Science at Western University. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.